Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the 34th and a half episode of the Triborough Podcast. I am one of your hosts, Nicholas O'Brien. As you can tell, I am not joined by Justin as of yet because I am away at home currently. I was home this past weekend because I had a wedding in the family. Shout out to Kaylin and Pat. Congrats, guys. But we're currently in separate states, really. So we couldn't get together for a full episode this week. So what we're going to do is kind of a little mini episode where we're going to boil the hot points for you guys, kind of condense it. And obviously I will be taking you through Queens, talk all things Mets from the past week. Then I'll hand it over to Justin where he'll talk to you guys all about the Yankees and what they went through this week. But let us know what you think of this little mini episode. Do you want more? Do you hate it? Do you love it? Do you want just regular episodes? Let us know in the comments and DMs on Instagram at Triborough Podcast. But without further ado, let's get right into Queens. As always, we will start with our injury report brought to you by the Triborough MD. We got a lot of injury news, a lot of good news, except for one. But Tylor Megill, he had a rehab assignment in Double A. He pitched two perfect innings, striking out six. David Peterson, coming off of hip surgery, he had a rehab in low A, Port St. Lucie, where he pitched two perfect innings as well, striking out five. Both of you guys are going to be really big for just pitching depth overall. David Peterson, especially, I'm still a big believer in Peterson. I still think he could be a very good major league starter, so I'm very excited to get him back. Kodai Senga, the most recent of the injuries, I'm recording this on Monday, so he threw a 20 pitch live bullpen on Monday at Citi Field. Afterwards, he kind of talked to reporters saying that that May 27th line might be good for him to return, but obviously that's if everything goes well, knocking on wood there. But seeing him on the mound, being able to throw to live hitters is just amazing. Obviously, Senga has been out since before the season started with a shoulder issue, but getting him back is going to boost this rotation by a long shot. And last but not least, unfortunately, Drew Smith hit the IL this past weekend with shoulder inflammation. Everybody in the know seems to be pretty confident that he will not miss too much time. He'll miss the minimum 15 days and then be slotted right back into that bullpen. Drew Smith, off to a really good start thus far in 2024. But that was your injury report. Now getting off to the week that was. The Mets had a very uneasy week. They had three games in San Francisco to close out their West Coast trip. Then they traveled back home to face the St. Louis Cardinals at Citi Field, debuting their Citi Connects this past Saturday. But starting off with San Francisco, the offense was extremely inconsistent from the get-go. They dropped the first two games, could not hit these Giant starters, Keaton Wynn, and then Logan Webb, who's just on a tear so far. I'm not going to give any credits to Justin because he is his Cy Young pick. But Logan Webb looked nasty. The Mets really didn't have any answers for him. Webb went eight innings, shutout innings, and the Mets just looked completely lost at the plate against him. But then in the third game, the offense is completely broke out against what was supposed to be a Blake Snell start, but he was placed on the IL before that game, so the Giants had to turn that game into a bullpen game. The offense broke out and scored eight runs versus a three-run combined from the past two games, so just huge boost of offense there. But the pitching, once again, continued to struggle, especially with walks and just getting behind hitters and just not really working the counts. Jose Quintana labored through six innings. Luis Severino looked good, but even he, after a few defensive misplays and some soft hits that landed, kind of seemed like he got in his own head and things kind of just unraveled from there. And even in the last game, which they won, Sean Manaea was not he was not perfect. He wasn't really locating. His pitches were off. He only lasted 4 2/3 innings pitched. But that's just been the story of these Mets starters, just no length, you know, sometimes not even giving the offense a chance, which we'll get into later. But the pitching obviously has been a problem. The length is really the main issue there. But San Francisco was just... The Mets always seem to have a hard time in San Francisco. I don't know what it is, but they always seem to have one blowout game or one really bad game in San Francisco. It's a beautiful ballpark. I really wish they played better there. I'm scared to go see them at San Francisco, but that is on the list. But yeah, so dropping 2 out of 3 in San Francisco gave them a 500 record for that West Coast trip. 3 games against the Dodgers, 3 games against the Giants. They went 3-3. Took 2 out of 3 of the Dodgers, lost 2 out of 3 against the Giants. But that's baseball. I think you take a 500 West Coast trip, especially this early in the season. But yeah, just a really rough series overall in San Fran. But Pete hit his 199th career home run, and we'll get into later why that's a little important. Lindor had a really good game in the last game of the series, but in game 2, he was a huge reason why they lost that game. He looked completely lost at the plate. But yeah, it was just a really, really bad showing from Lindor in game 2. But then he had a 2 home run game in game 3, and just hoping that it just leads to some consistency. Because so far this season, Lindor has a really good game. Everyone screams, oh, he's back, he'll be fine. And then he just lays a goose egg the next few games. Then he has another good game, and the cycle repeats. So hoping just for some consistency there from Francisco Lindor. But moving on from the San Francisco road trip, the Mets went back home to face the St. Louis Cardinals, who are struggling at the moment, kind of hovering around 500. But biggest story out of this game was J.D. Martinez is finally here. He was activated on Friday. Zach Short, unfortunately, was DFA'd. He was the odd man out, but J.D. Martinez is here. DJ Stewart kept his roster spot. Good for him. DJ really kind of tore things up. Excuse me, from his poor start. I mean, he's hitting around 200, but his OPS is north of 800. So if he's going to be a bench bat / platoon guy, you know, the Mets did mention that J.D. Martinez is not going to play every day to start off. He got a day off Sunday after playing Friday and Saturday, his first 2 games of the season. So there is some at-bats to go around for DJ Stewart. So if he can kind of keep that production up, that's going to be huge for this team. But starting off the first game, the Mets did lose game 1. Jose Buto got the start, but he struggled with command. You know, Buto has always, his command has always been his issue, but it was just, it wasn't a great start, but he kept the team in the game. And that's the biggest thing. That's the biggest thing I've been preaching with this starting rotation, is you just need them to keep you in the game. Because this offense, once everyone gets rolling, I feel can really put up some numbers. But they lost that first game 4-2 against the Cardinals. J.D. Martinez had an RBI double in his first game back. Tomas Nido had a very good game as well. He's looked really good at the plate. He was tearing it up in AAA, so even if he could just keep a little bit of that offense up in the majors while we wait for Alvarez to return, would be huge. But it was Pete and Lindor that kind of just laid a goose egg with runners in scoring position. It was really tough, but Buto only really had some 2 bad pitches. 1 pitch to Alec Burleson for a 3-run home run, 1 to Wilson Contreras for a solo shot. That was all the 4 runs any Mets pitchers gave up, but the offense just couldn't get it going against Miles Michaelis. Then moving on to game 2, the debut of the City Connect jerseys. I was lucky enough to be at that game. I really love what they did with the stadium, with the City Connects really blending into that, or diving into that Subway New York feel. I think it was really cool. The jerseys look even better in person. I really liked what I saw from just a marketing perspective. It was pretty cool. I enjoyed it quite a lot. But unfortunately, the game was not too enjoyable because Adrian Hauser had a very tough start. I don't have his line up, but I will grab that really quick. It was just a really bad start for Adrian Hauser. Let up 4 runs in the first inning before the Mets could even swing the bat. But his final line, 4 1/3, 9 hits, 6 runs, 2 walks, 2 strikeouts. The Cardinals end up scoring 7 runs. Adrian Hauser gave up 6. That kind of tells you everything you need to know there. Adrian Hauser just put the Mets in too big of a hole for them to claw out. And, you know, the offense did try to scrape back into this game, but they were facing some really tough competition with Sonny Gray on the mound. And yet they still were able to score 4 off of Sonny Gray, but just couldn't get anything else rolling. Pete Alonso hit his 200th career home run. That was super cool. Of course, when he hit it, I was up grabbing myself a grilled sausage, so I'm very upset about that. But I was there for his 200th career home run. That was pretty cool. Congrats to Pete. Hopefully, a lot more milestones in the future for him, especially as a Met. But the big storyline of this game was Adrian Hauser and his continued struggles. Obviously, the Dodgers game before this game against the Cardinals was atrocious. 4 innings, 8 runs. And I understand he's a fifth starter. I understand that it's going to be a bumpy road. He's going to have good games. He's going to have bad games. But Adrian Hauser has lost this team at least 2 games within himself. And seeing how this team is constructed and the expectations put on this team, every game matters. This team is really looking to get into a wild card spot, and that wild card spot can be decided by a game or two. So every game counts, even in April. Obviously, there's still time to go on a run and everything, but as of right now, every game counts, and Hauser has lost you 2 by himself. As a Met, he currently is holding a 8.37 ERA in 5 games so far. His whip is approaching 2 at 1.9. He's 0-3. Adrian Hauser has just been really bad, and I really liked the move to begin with, but not looking great for Hauser. Get into that a little bit later. But the last game of this series was spectacular. I mean, it had a little bit of everything that you could ask for. Jose Quintana, he may be the forgotten hero of this game. I hope not. I'm definitely not going to sit here and tell you that Jose Quintana wasn't a big part of this game. He had the longest outing of a Mets starter thus far, the first starter of the season to pitch the 7th and 8th inning. Quintana went 8 innings, 3 hits, 1 earned run against the St. Louis Cardinals. But the offense just couldn't really get much going off against Lance Lynn. They were 0-15 with runners in scoring position in this game alone. Lindor tied the game at 1 with a home run. Bader tied the game for a single in extra innings. And then Mark Vientos, who was called up because Starling Marte went on the bereavement list, crushed a walk-off 2-run home run off of Matthew Liberatore to win the game 4-2. And just the emotions from Vientos were just unreal. I really think that this team, now under 2 different managements, have really been doing Vientos a disservice. Under Billy Epler, he never really got a chance to really show anything. Very inconsistent playing time. And even with David Stearns, I mean, obviously there's time to change that. But once Starling Marte is back, Mark Vientos is the odd man out. You have, call it, Tomas Nido on the bench, then Joey Wendell, Tyrone Taylor, and right now it's Mark Vientos. So he's the odd man out when Marte's back. And it's just I don't understand why you call him up for, call it, 3 days. Look, again, there's time to change it, but you call him up for 3 days, just send him back down. I think it's doing him an absolute disservice. I was preaching Mark Vientos throughout the entire offseason. So to see him kind of treated like this is very disappointing. But look, he so far, he's making his limited opportunity count. He gets the start Monday night at third base over a struggling Brett Beatty. So we'll see what happens with him. But overall, this week, the Mets went 2-4. They're staying afloat around 500, which a lot of people pegged them at. But just a big thing with the Mets so far from the eye test has been hitting with runners in scoring position. Now, as a team, they're 14th in the league with a 114 WRC plus with runners in scoring position. But you kind of dig deeper a little into that. They are 21st in hard hit rate with runners in scoring position. So not really hitting the ball hard. It's really tough to score runs when you're, you know, toppling over or really just hitting weak fly balls or line drives right at guys. And then the most alarming part of this is Lindor and Alonso have been non-factors with runners in scoring position. Lindor currently holds a 37 WRC plus with runners in scoring position, as he has the most plate appearances on the team. Alonso, on the other hand, not as bad, but still 76 WRC plus with runners in scoring position. These are your 3 and 4 hitters. These are the guys that you need to hit with runners in scoring position. Lindor and Alonso both had 100, most near 100 RBIs the past two seasons, and so far they haven't got it going. So these two guys you really need to get going, especially if runners in scoring position. And then going on to pitching, obviously Jose Quintana looked fantastic on Sunday, but this pitching staff still has some issues. They have faced the third most batters in a 3-2 count. They have the highest ball percentage in the league with 40% of their pitches being balls. And then that's the highest ball percentage, which in contrast, they have the lowest strike percentage with 60% of their pitches being strikes. So they're throwing the most balls, therefore they're not throwing the most strikes. They're getting behind hitters, they're getting themselves in bad counts, and they're racking up their pitch count, which then obviously leads to less length. That's got to change. You have a lot of pitchers, really, Quintana, Hauser, even Manaea can kind of throw in there. Not huge strikeout guys. These guys are more contact-oriented guys. You can't be nipping around the strike zone. You got to go after guys. You have 8 other guys, well, I guess 7 because catcher, but you have 7 other guys on that field to catch the ball and make a play. That's the name of the game. You can't be nipping around the strike zone and walking everybody when you don't have strikeout stuff. But going back to Jose Quintana, that 8th inning was fantastic. Carlos Mendoza walks out with 2 outs in the inning as Wilson Contreras walks up. Talks to Jose Quintana. He has Adam Ottavino ready to pitch. Talks to Quintana, turns around, walks back to the dugout. Quintana strikes out Wilson Contreras to end the inning and end his day, pitching 8 full innings. And I just absolutely love that. Having a manager, now, as you guys may have known and kind of figured, I'm a huge numbers guy. I will look in the numbers. The numbers tell you a lot, so you can't dismiss it. But baseball is such a touch and feel sport that I just absolutely love what Mendoza did here with Quintana. Going out, talking to him, how does he feel? He has a feel for the game, has a feel for the situation. The numbers aren't everything. So seeing a manager do this is just fantastic. And I love what I've seen from Mendoza. Just from a vibes perspective, just from managing, he doesn't manage just by the numbers, he goes by feel, and I think that's super important. And then lastly, just to touch on Hauser a little bit more, is there is a dilemma here. I mean, a near 9 ERA for your 5th starter is just not going to cut it. Hauser in the past has been kind of a swingman with the Brewers. So with guys like, you know, obviously Senga, with guys like McGill, Peterson, Max Kranich is back, Christian Scott is in the minors waiting for his opportunity. You have guys that can take that 5th spot, that Hauser's spot in the rotation shouldn't be a guarantee. And he has to show quickly that he can there's a reason for him to stay in this rotation. But besides that, that was your quick recap for the week that was. Then I'll hand it over to Justin. So thank you guys for listening to my end, but we'll see Justin in Bronx in just a little bit. Thank you guys.
Hey guys, welcome to the Bronx. As I'm sure Nick explained, we're kind of doing like this half episode, you know, moving in, moving out of school, just a lot of complicated things going on. So welcome to, I think it's 34 and a half, 35 and a half. I don't know at this point. I have ADHD if you guys don't know already. For the Bronx, just one thing I wanted to say before I got into it is thank God. He's listened to our prayers. Almighty Jeff Passan has bombed atomically like he always does. So a memo that he acquired, he announced, said that MLB is modifying uniforms after widespread complaints from players and fans. That means that where we could literally see the parts of men that you should not be seeing on national television will no longer be seen on national television. Huh. Great idea, Emily. Finally, that's taking rid of. How the new jerseys will look, who knows, but it has to be better than whatever shit we've been dealing with. And one kind of funny thing. So the big thing was the pants. The jerseys themselves, they weren't good whatsoever, don't get me wrong. But the Yankees ones weren't horrible. Especially the ones without the names. I was talking to my roommate Joe. Fanatics is selling all their shit right now. It's 75% off. So you get an authentic Yankee jersey with the, what's it called? With no name on it, $45. That's a hell of a deal. And you could probably see my glasses. You could see your reflection of myself. Sorry, like I said, ADHD. But yeah, $45 for an authentic Yankee jersey when it usually costs like $400. I don't think the jersey's that good, but I'm just saying, not a bad deal if you want an authentic one. But then getting into like the actual Bronx, the reason why you guys are listening. So we have a lot to talk about for your injury update brought to you by the Triborough MD, because I am a professional doctor, if you guys did not know. Yeah, don't fact check that. So Gerrit Cole will start throwing off a mound sometime this week. Yeah, that's just massive. The recovery looks like he's on schedule. There's nothing really going wrong with that. So that's huge for this rotation. I'll get into the rotation later, but it's going to be a very interesting kind of discussion who you're going to take out, because everyone's done really damn well. But I'll get more into that later. Peraza has been hitting in Tampa and progressing through a fielding program described as weeks away. Yeah, I don't... Even if, like, when Peraza gets healthy, I don't know what his role is with this team. He may honestly be sent to AAA. If John Birdie comes back, I just don't see where you put him on the team. One thing we talked about, I believe it was on the radio show, is if Glaber's not hitting well, are you going to Phantom IL him when Peraza comes back? So that could be maybe a way that Peraza gets on the roster, just kind of something to keep an eye out for, kind of look out for. And then Lou Trevino, everyone forgets that we have him. I forget him too. He got Tommy John surgery. He is about 2 weeks from live batting practice. That's a really good thing, because you don't really have that many guys in the bullpen. By guys, I mean like guys you really feel confident with. So him and Tommy Canley, they should be back soon. There's no update on Canley, but he's kind of just been like slowly progressing, so nothing negative on that part. But then someone that has had a lot of negative news is DJ LeMahieu. So it was on Tuesday, he started a rehab start. I believe it was for single A. He was either high or low A, regardless. And he played an inning, struck out, played an inning in the field, and then left with right foot soreness. The right foot fracture is what he was dealing with, rehabbing it, and now he's dealing with soreness in it. So that's obviously just not a good thing whatsoever when the guy's rehabbing it. Then it gets hurt again. So it's just, or not even hurt, but soreness. He should be, they came out and said that he'll be shut down for, I believe it's 2 or 3 more days, because this happened Tuesday when the report came out. So he'll be shut down for a couple more days. I don't know what you do with him. Like, it really is just a thing of these injuries are really starting to pile up more and more and more with him. I just, what are we gonna do with him? It really sucks, because 2019, 2020, DJ LeMahieu was legitimately one of the best players in MLB. And now it's like, I feel bad for the guy. He's just one of those guys that all he does is love to play baseball. He's the machine. That's all he knows how to do. And just, yeah, sucks for him. Then moving on to a couple more positive things. So Jason Dominguez has increased his throwing to 135 feet. Huge. My thing with Dominguez, even when he does come back, barring an injury, where is he going to play? Because if Stanton is still healthy and Stanton's swinging the bat well, are you going to, like, put... like, are you just not going to play him? You're going to put him in the outfield, then you're going to put Dominguez at DH? How much are you going to trust Dominguez throwing with an arm that just got Tommy John on it? And when he would most likely come back, he's probably going to come out in summer, so that'd be, like, less than a year removed from having Tommy John surgery. So... sorry about that. I had a nice burrito today. It was very nice. So I just burped a little bit from it. I'm sorry. If you cannot tell, I'm losing it. I already usually don't have it. I usually am a little psycho, but without someone to stop me from talking, I am a lot more psychotic, if you cannot tell. But yeah, huge for Dominguez. It's champagne problems when it comes to him, Peraza, and LeMahieu, where, like, you have that much depth. And the best players, I believe, will play. We just gotta wait to see what happens. Then two other guys is John Birdie will begin a rehab assignment in Double A on Sunday. Yeah, obviously it's a great thing for John Birdie. Give me 1 second. I'm just gonna look up Yankees injury because I may have boofed it. I may have boofed John Birdie. Give me literally today is. Okay, never mind. So we started a rehab assignment yesterday, not next Sunday. Sorry about that. It's a lot harder when it's just you talking, and I made, like, one small little mistake, and I had to correct it myself. But yeah, another thing, great depth. Hopefully he comes back fine. And then the last one for, I wouldn't even call this an injury update, more roster move. Alex Verdugo got placed on the paternity list. Obviously, congratulations to him and his wife on having, I believe it's a girl. I could be wrong, don't quote me, don't smite me from the heavens if I'm wrong on that. But yeah, of course, congrats to him. And then getting into the actual games themselves. So, the past week, the Yankees, I made a pretty strong stance where if the Yankees went less than 5-2, it wasn't a good week. They went 4-3, but I think there were a lot of positives that came out of it. So, kind of like the big issues going into the series is that you had a lot of guys that either were performing well and then cooling down, or you had a bunch of guys that just were not, like, they were not here. Like, they never really started going, and you've seen a lot more of those guys starting to either pick it back up or really start their season. Aaron Judge, I guess we'll just start with him because he is your captain. He is your most important hitter on the team. Like, I know Juan Soto is incredible, but Aaron Judge is, when he is healthy, the best hitter in baseball. That's not really hyperbole. Literally, he broke the AL record for home runs. You look at his numbers throughout his career, when Aaron Judge is healthy, he is the best hitter in baseball, especially power hitter. So his bat in this lineup is so just crucial. And in the last six games, he has 3 home runs. The last game on Sunday, he got on base 4 times in the game. He's really starting to pick it up. And since April 21st, so I think his last 7 days, he has a 188 WRC+. It cannot be said how much this does for the lineup, because Soto, he's been hitting the entire year. He had 3 home runs in the last week, 152 WRC+, and even then, that's lower than what his season average was. He had a 152 WRC+ this week, and his numbers went down. His numbers got worse because he was 52% above average. That just shows how good he's been. And I didn't even mean to do this, but really the 4 guys that I'm highlighting are at the top of the lineup, Like, I completely, like, forgot to even talk about Alex Verdugo, and I don't understand how I did, because he has been maybe their best hitter over the last 2 weeks. I don't know what the numbers, like, would say, if they would agree with me or not on that, but if we go to his game log, and I'll just do April 21st, because that's what I've been doing for everyone, then do this. Bada bing, bada boom. This is a really impromptu thing. I am sorry about this, guys. It's a lot harder to do numbers when it's only you. So let me go a little bit further back. Because over the last week, he has a 182 WRC+. But I bet, like... So since last 2 weeks, it's 146. You go to April 16th, it's 164. April 17th, it's 150. So he's had like 150 WRC plus for the last 2 weeks. I don't know how, like, I didn't really have him penciled in as a guy to talk about for hitting wise, but he's been pretty damn good. That's why it kind of sucks that his getting put on the paternity list now. Would have wished it would have been like when he's in a cold stretch, but obviously life's more important than game, so can't really fault him that. He was even the four hole the last two games, which I really liked. With him hitting that well, and Rizzo was starting to pick it up, but he wasn't there yet. But Verdugo was just a lot more consistent. I really fucking like that. I thought it was perfect. But talking about Rizzo, the last week, he's had four home runs. Four. And he's had a 287 WRC+. He... last week was 187% better than an MLB average hitter. I've been critical of Rizzo this year. I love Rizzo, but I've been very critical of him. I'll be the first person to admit that. Whether it be the errors, he was kind of really inconsistent as a hitter, more towards the beginning of the year. But if he wants to pick it up and he wants to do this, holy shit. That 2-3-4 of Soto, Judge, Rizzo, if all three of those guys are hitting, I don't get how you pitch this lineup. I don't understand how you can navigate this lineup if all of them are just playing at such an elite level. Because they all are very different at-bats when you think about it, too. Like, Soto is going to work the count. He's not going to swing unless you give him a pitch to swing at. And so he'll take his walk, but if you give him anything to hit, he will crank it 450 feet. Aaron Judge, he'll also take his bat. You're flipping it over to the right side, but he just has that generational type power. And I hate the term generational, but he literally broke the fucking record for the AL home run. And I'm pretty sure he leads MLB in home runs since he came into the league while missing how many goddamn games? So... and then you have Rizzo, who you flip it back over to the left side. He's kind of that more funky guy, crowding the plate. He'll get on base any way he possibly can. You have those three at-bats that are completely different from each other, back to back to back. I don't get how you pitch to that. And especially when you consider Anthony Volpe, who was off to this incredible start, then cooled down. Over the last week, he has a 139 WRC+. So Anthony Volpe has hit a lot better as of late. A lot better. The at-bats have just looked a lot better. So you're having that 1-2-3-4. I don't get how you could pitch this lineup. And even then, say Stan starts hitting. Stan's been okay recently. Hasn't been anything special. You also have Verdugo at 6. Or when Verdugo comes back, you put him at 4, Rizzo at 6, whatever. But that's so insane. That's just crazy to me. And even then, the catchers have been really well. I don't have the numbers on them, but... Trevino's been hitting pretty well, same as Austin Wells. We talked about it, like, I think it was a week or two ago, about how Austin Wells was just the most unlucky hitter in baseball. He's really starting to hit now, and I'm pretty sure in this lineup today, he's hitting sixth. So, I know I said that at the beginning of the week, 5-2 or anything less would be a disappointment, but... you went 4-3, but you scored 15 the last two games. I completely forgot to mention it. The last two games of the series against the Brewers, you dropped 15 runs. It's just one of those things where I'll backtrack it. Like, honestly, like, it sounds like I'm backtracking and I'm, like, playing both sides. No, like, I'll be honest. I was wrong. I did not see a world where if they went less than 5-2 that this would be a good week. And this may be... You could have gone 3-4. And if you had these results happen, I would still be happy about it. So, this was absolutely massive. And I've talked about the offense quite a bit, so I'm just going to kind of go on to the pitching side of it. So, the Yankees have the second best ERA in baseball. Starters are the fourth best. And outside of... Well, the thing I really want to talk about is outside of when they have a doubleheader, everyone has made their start. They've only had 6 pitchers start a game this year, with one of them being Cody Bautista, when he started that one doubleheader game. I'm just looking at, like, the guy's numbers this year, and let me, because FanGraphs is a little weird the way that I have it, where just kind of the way I have my phone. Sorry if it seems that I'm been a little funky, but so Nestor on the year has a 3.5 ERA. Rodon has a 2.48. You have Luis Gil, who has a 4.01. You have Clark Schmidt, who has a 3.55. You have Marcus Stroman, who has a 3.69. And even then, I would say he's kind of been, like, iffy the last week. Like, that number's gone up from what it really was earlier. And just, yeah, I'm more than happy with this rotation. Because I mentioned Gerrit Cole, and this is without Gerrit Cole. The whole storyline was, if you can be .500 by the time Gerrit Cole comes back, you're fine. The Yankees are the best record in baseball. They're 19-10. They're first in the AL East. That's fucking insane. Like, I don't get how they're doing it. It's all because of the offense. But that truly is one of those things where if this pitching wasn't that well, like, pitching this well, I don't know where the Yankees would be. Because they're a team that the offense has really been inconsistent. They've started to do a lot better as of late. But inconsistent is kind of the perfect way to describe them this season. So I am more than happy with how the starters have performed. The part of the pitching that I'm not really that happy with is the bullpen. So the bullpen has the fourth best ERA in Major League Baseball. Pretty solid. But they have the 14th highest FIP. The 14th lowest, my bad. It's tough. Because I really don't feel confident in any of these guys. Because I'm just looking at it. Clay Holmes has 0 ERA on the year. And I still pace around and get a little nervous when he's pitching. As crazy it is to say when a guy has 0 ERA in 13 innings. Ian Hamilton is a 15.1 innings pitched to a 2.93 ERA. I feel more comfortable with him. But then you have a guy, Dennis Santana, who has, in 12.1 innings pitched, a 4.38 ERA. Not good. I will say he has a 2.94 FIP, so that is higher than it is. But then you have guys like Luke Weaver, who 3.57 ERA. Okay, that's solid. 4.09 FIP, 4.54 expected FIP. You have Nick Birdie, who has a 0 ERA on the season, a 5.06 FIP. Michael Tonkin, who blew the game on Friday. That was just horrible. Mets know all about him. 4.55 expected FIP. You have, let's see, who else do you have? You have Ron Marinaccio. I'll give him this. He has a 2.35 ERA, but a 3.82 expected FIP, so he's getting lucky there. You have Caleb Ferguson and Victor Gonzalez, where two guys you got from the Dodgers. Caleb Ferguson has blown I don't know how many games. It just, there's not that feeling of safety when he gets into the game. Like, he has a, let's see, a 4.76 ERA and a 4.77 FIP. Not good. And that's in 11 innings. Victor Gonzalez has a 2.61 ERA. All right, pretty good. 5.7 FIP, 6.8 expected FIP. Or 6.08 expected FIP. I don't feel confident with this pitching staff or with this bullpen. That's why I think, like, getting guys like Trevino and Canley back is going to be absolutely massive for it. The one thing that kind of, because I don't want to look at the trade deadline already, like, it's fucking, you're a month into the season, like, that's still so far out. But a guy that the Yankees should be all over is Mason Miller. I don't think the Athletics trade him because he has six, including this year, 6 years of control on him. So I think you're literally going to have to give up your number one prospect, probably more, to be able to get him just because he is absolutely disgusting. He saved the two games that the A's beat the Yankees in. They didn't have a chance. He literally made them look like just idiots. And that wasn't, they had solid at-bats. It's just his stuff is absolutely disgusting because he can throw an 86-mile-an-hour slider with some insane movement and then dot 102, 103 on the black. I'm not exaggerating. Look this up if you don't believe me. And, yeah, just a bullpen guy, definitely going to be something to look out for. But then looking ahead to our series, so the Yankees are starting a four-game series in Camden Yards. And the first game, for me, will be starting in 24 minutes. You have Clark Schmidt. No way I actually just call him Clark Schmidt. Clark Schmidt going up against Grayson Rodriguez for game one, Nestor Cortes versus Dean Kramer, Luis Gil versus Corbin Burns, and then Carlos Rodon versus TBD. Yeah, you gotta split. Like, you gotta at least split here. Right now, you're number one in the AL East. You're up two games, so I think you can actually lose. You could go 1-3 and still have the lead, but you only play 13 games against the Orioles. You need to have that head-to-head. You need to get off to a really hot start against them and kind of give yourself more cushion. I know it's a month into the season, but this Oriole team is scary. Jackson Holliday came up. He didn't do well. He got sent down. So this team, when he gets ready, and when I see him coming up this year. So when it comes to a team like this, you got to put them down early. They're young kids. Just finish the job early. That's really all I could say. I'd assume I'm doing the outro. So obviously, subscribe to us on YouTube, Spotify, all of that good stuff, because we are very thankful for you guys listening. A lot of people, like, I'll say it sometimes and not really think about it. When I really think about it, I really am thankful for everyone that is listening, watching, whatever you're doing. Like, this means a lot to me. Me and Nick started this as just like a passion project, and it really has just been fun. And just how we've developed, whether it be going on the radio, getting in the podcast studio, just, yeah, this really does mean a lot to me, and I really want to thank everyone that has in some way contributed to this. So, yeah, I'm so bad at doing outros. If you guys can tell, this is why Nick does them. So, yeah, see you guys next time.